Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 26, 2014. MSF says they lack the resources needed to help tens of thousands of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda.
We also have some challenges with our drugs. Some drugs are going out of stock because we are experiencing quite a large number of patients coming in.
And local officials in Malakal say the town is safe and residents should come home.
We want to bring the services to the town, particularly concerning communication, because now the communication is not there, and also the water and people, they can go home to houses.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Health officials say they lack the supplies and manpower needed to reach some 60,000 South Sudanese refugees living in Uganda's Adjumani district. MSF says health conditions could rapidly become worse as heavy rains increase cases of life-threatening diseases like malaria. Bonifacio Taban traveled to Adjumani and has this story for VOA.
Dr. Osad Border, known by its French acronym MSF, provide basic medical care to refugees living in the district poor refugees camps. Jaspers Adotas, a nurse supervisor for MSF, hand out medicine to children diagnosed with a range of illness. Adotas said there are probably a dozen more children and adults who need medical care, but MSF does not have the resource to reach all of them.
We had challenges with staffs. And we are still working on trying to recruit many more staffs to come in. And we plan to have a 24-hour service when we shift to our new environment. However, we also have some challenges with our drugs. Some drugs are going out of stock because we are experiencing quite a large number of patients coming in.
A doctor said it is not unusual to see up to 150 patients on weekly days and 120 on weekends. And she said they expect that to go up soon as the rainy season moves into full swings. The heavy rain brings an increase in mosquitoes that transmit malaria. He said MSF is working on erecting new health centers in all four camps. Construction has already begun. They hope to have them in place before the rain increase in April.
Our operations is pretty organized, and we are going to manage the patients in this camp very well, because we're not only running this camp, we have other camps like Niumanzi, Baratuku, and we are running it all well.
But MSF cannot meet the need of all the 10,000 of refugees living in the camp. Despite the health concern, William Mabiodengs, the chairperson of Ayilo Refugees Camp, conditions are better than they have been for many refugees.
It is improving. There were some public latrines ducked by the UN agencies in this place.
Deng said now that the rain have started, there is no time for the refugees to consider relocating or moving to permanent settlement with a better health service. He said they will just hope for the best. For VOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban in Kampala.
Now that Malakal town appears to be firmly under the control of government forces, officials are encouraging residents who fled when anti-government forces took control of the town to come home. As Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba, Upper Nile state officials say the situation is now safe.
When fighting broke out between pro-government and anti-government forces in Malakal last month, more than 20,000 residents fled to a nearby UN camp for safety. Thousands of others fled to neighboring towns including Melut, Wau Shiluk, Makal Shiluk and Lelo. Upper Nile State's Information Minister, Philip Jiben Ogal, says the town is still quiet and deserted, but residents are slowly returning.
The security is normal in Upper Nile, in Malakal particularly. The morning people come out from the Unamis and Makal Shiluk, so they're moving to see the houses. They used to go back to the compound of the Unamis.
During last month's fighting, Malakal was completely destroyed. Dozens of dead bodies lay in the streets. Jiben, who is also Upper Nile State spokesperson, says The town's authorities are working with humanitarian agencies, including the South Sudan Red Cross, to remove debris from the town.
The town needs to be clean, so now we are working to clean the towns and then maintain the town back to be normal, and also to collect the dead body or the bones of the people. That is what I want to tell you.
2 weeks ago, state authorities had temporarily relocated the state capital to Renk near the border with Sudan, fearing the town was vulnerable to another attack. Jiben says now that government forces have regained control of Malakal, all state officials will be moving back to Malakal and basic services will be provided to residents who return.
We want to bring the services to the town, particularly running communication, because now the communication is not there, so we want to establish the communication network. And also the water and all of things should be maintained. And then people, they can go home to houses.
Jiben realizes that some residents may not want to return to Malakal immediately since they have lost everything during the fighting. He says officials are still working to establish the number of people killed in the town since pro- and anti-government forces first clashed in the town in late December. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
The United Nations is facing massive funding shortfalls as it tries to feed millions of people in need in South Sudan and Sudan. From the UN headquarters in New York, Margaret Bashir reports that without urgent needed funds, people may die.
The head of operations for the UN's humanitarian division, John Ging, said Tuesday that the agency has requested nearly $2.3 billion in funding for humanitarian efforts this year in Sudan, its Darfur region, and South Sudan. More than 2 million people are displaced in Darfur, and over 6 million need humanitarian assistance across Sudan. In South Sudan, recent violence has internally displaced some 700,000 people and forced nearly a quarter of a million others to flee to neighboring countries as refugees. The UN says almost 5 million people in South Sudan are in urgent need of basic humanitarian assistance. Ging told reporters that the appeals are dangerously underfunded.
In that gap between what we receive and what we need are people dying. It's as graphic and as tragic as that.
Of the $995 million request for Sudan, only 3%, or $34 million, has been received. On South Sudan, only a quarter of the nearly $1.3 billion requested has been funded. Ging recently traveled to the region with UNICEF's Deputy Director of Emergency Operations, Yasmin Haque, and the emergency directors of several other UN agencies and NGO partners. South Sudan has less than 1,000 kilometers of paved roads. Yasmin Haque stressed that during the rainy season, which will begin in June, dirt roads will become impassable, making up to three-quarters of the country inaccessible. Normally, aid agencies position supplies during the dry season so they can distribute them during the wet months. But Haque said that has not been possible this year due to the fighting, access issues, and funding constraints.
This means that not enough food has been prepositioned throughout the country. We don't have the type of water and sanitation supplies, nutritional supplements that are so needed to treat the cases of malnutrition, seeds and tools, agricultural implements, whatever is needed to keep a group of people who are in a dire need from slipping further into grave humanitarian consequences.
In addition to insufficient funding, Ging said in South Sudan, humanitarian workers face delays at checkpoints, slowing down the delivery of aid to those in need. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
As we reported yesterday, the U.S. government recently donated an additional $83 million in humanitarian aid to help hundreds of thousands of people displaced by the crisis. South Sudan's foreign minister says the Kiir administration has received assurances from its international and regional partners they will not accept any undemocratic military change in the government. Barnaba Marial Benjamin says the recent visit of Col Manyang Juk, South Sudan's defense minister, to Egypt was aimed at bolstering diplomatic relations between Cairo and Juba. He dismissed reports indicating that Juba was requesting military help from Cairo. Benjamin tells reporter Peter Clody that South Sudan is a friend to all countries in the region.
We started making visits of thanks and appreciation, and also explaining the circumstances that brought the crisis. I visited Egypt. I was a guest of honor to deliver and explain the Arab Foreign Ministers League of Arab States meeting, where the Foreign Minister of South Sudan was asked to come and explain the crisis. So I can tell you, South Sudan is properly understood now in the light of the issues that happened with regards to how quickly South Sudan went to the negotiating table through the IGAD mediation, the signing of the cessation of hostilities. Now we are at the level of verification and watching mechanism, as well as the Joint Technical Committee to be formed.
Recently, the Egyptian Minister for Defense was in South Sudan. Is it part of a military relationship with Egypt?
These are issues of bilateral relations to strengthen relations between Egypt and South Sudan. Don't forget, when Sudan was one, it was known as Anglo-Egyptian Sudan. So South Sudan has had a very long historical connection with Egypt. Most of our students, it is one country in which we have one of the highest numbers of students studying in their universities on Egyptian government scholarships. So our Minister of Defense is on a bilateral visit to Cairo, and he was warmly received indeed. I think the Minister of Defense had a letter from the President to the President of the Arab Republic of Egypt. So these are normal diplomatic relations indeed.
We also heard reports that it appeared South Sudan has invited Egypt to set up an army base in South Sudan following the visit of South Sudan Defense Minister there. Is it true?
No, I think that it is not true. But what happened is that Egypt had applied in New York to the United Nations if they could also contribute to peacekeeping forces in the Republic of South Sudan, like the other countries who have contributed troops to armies. And I think that was the request that the Egyptian government presented to the United Nations peacekeeping desk in New York. But don't forget, even before the independence of South Sudan, Egypt had some troops in southern Kordofan as a part of the peacekeeping forces that were inside Sudan before independence of South Sudan.
That's South Sudan's Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin speaking with reporter Peter Clody in Juba yesterday.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The beginning of the rainy season raises the risk of cholera and dysentery. These are infections of the intestine that cause cramps, severe diarrhea, dehydration, and sometimes even death. The diseases can be spread when floodwaters carry human waste. And even after the rain ends, the tiny organisms that cause the diseases can continue to live on in stagnant pools of water. That's why it's so important for you and your family not to eat contaminated food or drink bad water. Only drink bottled water or water that's been boiled or purified. Peel raw fruits and vegetables before eating them, or even better, cook them for at least 5 minutes and eat them while they're still hot. Finally, make sure you wash your hands with soap and water before eating. Taking these steps will help you and your family avoid serious disease.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a prosecution witness at the Juba treason trial says they had no evidence the detainees tried to stage a coup. That is coming up after this.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus, and there are now a number of options for listening to the program. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country. Check our website, voanews.com/South Sudan, for the listings. In Juba, you can listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5, VOA's 24-hour station. You can also find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 9490, 11655, and 13870 kilohertz. Or you can listen on the web, voanews.com/South Sudan. And finally, you can download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the importance of free elections?
Well, when we have free elections, the citizens are given the rights to choose the people who they believe will be responsible to manage their resources. In cases where elections are not free, of course, there are tyrannies and dictators who come in to bring down the resources of a particular country. So elections should be very free and fair.
Free election is so people are mature enough so that they can choose out their leader. From this, we see that the people have the ability to choose their leader in terms of mature enough to lead their people.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The trial of four political detainees accused of treason continues today following yesterday's temporary adjournment when a witness failed to appear. Under cross-examination, two witnesses for the prosecution acknowledged they did not have evidence the four men on trial were involved in an alleged coup attempt. Philip Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Army Brigadier General Atim Benjamin was the second witness the prosecution called today. He told the court he has evidence that former Vice President Riek Machar led an uprising against the government that started December 15 in a Juba military barracks. He says when he questioned soldiers that were considering rebelling, they told him they were doing so under the leadership of Machar. But under cross-examination by the defense, Benjamin said he does not have evidence that the four men on trial were involved in an attempt to overthrow the government. The four politicians are Pagana Amom, Majanga God, Oya Edeng, and Ezekiel Garquot. Defense lawyer Munluaka Lor says Benjamin's testimony was a big victory for his side.
They have brought two witnesses today that they call prosecution witnesses. And from their testimony, we don't have anything to fear ourselves. We feel that there is no danger that they have posed to our case. It's getting weaker and weaker.
The other witness, Major General Mike Paul Kual, who is the Director of Military Intelligence, accused former Unity State Governor Taban Dengai of being involved in the plot. Kual testified that he arrested a soldier in mid-December who was attempting to make copies of keys to an armory inside the Gieda military barracks inside Juba. He says he received a phone call from Guy asking him why the soldier had been arrested. Kual says he found the phone call suspicious and informed higher ups in the military. But under cross-examination, Kual also conceded he has no clear evidence that the four men on trial were involved in the alleged coup. Neither Guy nor Machar have been arrested. The lead lawyer of the prosecutions, James Mayen, says his team is trying to present a complete picture of what happened, which means not every witness will have his specific evidence against the accused.
We are coming to give more witness. After finishing of the witnesses, we will turn to the defense case. Okay. So far, we have presented about six witnesses. Okay. We are left with about six. Well, my case is proceeding well.
The special court began hearing the case against the four politicians earlier this month. If found guilty of treason, the four could face the death penalty or life imprisonment. For BOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders is helping to contain Ebola outbreak in Guinea. It is working with the Ministry of Health to set up facilities to isolate patients in the southern part of the country. WHO confirms 62 people are dead in Guinea and four of the dead are health workers. A total of 87 cases are suspected. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Dr. Bart Janssens is Director of Operations in Brussels for Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF.
Ebola is a disease of the family of the viral hemorrhagic fevers caused by Ebola virus. It's a rather rare disease, only occurs in a small number of countries in Africa, tropical Africa. When it reaches humans, it's extremely contagious and also a very deadly disease.
It spread from person to person.
You can only attract the disease by having direct physical contact with body fluids of patients. So it does not spread as a flu, for example, where the transmission is airborne through small droplets of saliva.
The symptoms begin with a sudden high fever, followed by severe muscle pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. The patient then suffers from severe internal or external bleeding, which then leads to shock. This can all happen in just 2 to 3 weeks. The World Health Organization says the Ebola patients have come from 4 districts, Gekedu, Macenta, Nzérékordé, and Kissidougou. MSF is creating isolation facilities in Kissidougou and Nzérékordé. Dr. Janssen says the source of Guinea's outbreak has not yet been pinpointed, and it may never be.
In general, we know that Ebola virus normally lives among small wild animals. They are small monkeys or bats. So that's often the source of the infection towards humans.
He says a person can become infected after being bitten by an animal carrying the virus or by using the animal for bushmeat. Ebola's mortality rate can be very high, but Janssen says good medical care can save lives.
It is a deadly disease, but still, in our experience, up to 40-50% of the people affected can survive. There is no effective specific treatment against the viral infection, but if you bring good supportive care, this gives a higher chance for people to survive, and at the same time, it does also create good palliative care for people that do not survive the disease.
Healthcare workers must wear protective gear and follow strict procedures to prevent being infected themselves. Dr. Janssen says containing the Ebola outbreak in Guinea goes beyond isolating patients.
What we need to do is to spread information about the epidemic to have the best possible preventive behavior in the communities. For example, it's important that funerals happen in the correct way and that some practices that can be dangerous, like washing bodies and so forth, are abandoned during the time of the epidemic. What is also very important is to trace close contacts of people that have been identified as ill.
MSF mobile teams are also looking for signs of the disease in Guinea's neighboring countries of Sierra Leone and Liberia. The last Ebola outbreaks were reported in 2012 in Uganda and the DRC. Dozens of people died. MSF says since its discovery in 1976, there have been about 2,200 cases, 1,500 of which were fatal. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
A new report from Human Rights Watch says Ethiopia is using some of the world's most advanced surveillance softwares to monitor communications from Ethiopians at home and abroad. Mata Vandewof reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Human Rights Watch says that the Ethiopian government is spying on its citizens and monitoring the activities of Ethiopians in the diaspora by using high-tech software from China, Italy, and Germany. Felix Horn is the Horn of Africa researcher with the International Human Rights Organization. He says the Ethiopian government has unlimited access to records of phone calls and emails of Ethiopians at home and abroad.
Inside of Ethiopia, its control of its Chinese developed telecom system results in it having unfettered access to the phone records, you know, to the metadata of all phone calls in the country. Outside of the country, they're using Western-made technologies to target the activities of very specific members of the diaspora. These technologies are being provided by a company in Italy called Hacking Team and a company in Germany called Gamma.
Ethiopia's telecommunication is monopolized by the state-owned Ethio Telecom. A SIM card can only be obtained in Ethiopia after registering personal details, making it easy for the government to identify domestic callers, according to Human Rights Watch. A U.S. citizen of Ethiopian origin filed a lawsuit against the Ethiopian government last month, saying his computer had been hacked and he had been spied on for more than 4 months. Horn says that certain ethnic groups feel particularly at risk when answering phone calls from abroad.
One of the things that we found in our research is that individuals that receive phone calls from abroad are often targeted and accused of talking to banned organizations or of plotting something against government, despite there being very little evidence to that effect.
Getachew Reda, an advisor to Ethiopia's prime minister, denies the Human Rights Watch report. He says the group has made it a habit to accuse Ethiopia of almost everything that goes wrong in the region, and it has a negative knee-jerk reaction about any developments in the country. He adds that the government would not waste resources in eavesdropping conversation of opposition figures and that the accusations are pure hogwash. Marten van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. U.S. President Barack Obama is in Brussels for meetings with the EU and NATO officials that are expected to further reinforce Western opposition to Russia's annexation of Crimea from Ukraine. In his NATO talks, President Obama will reassure allies of U.S. support and urge members to provide assistance to the Ukrainian government. He then travels from Belgium to Italy, where he will meet with Pope Francis. Speaking to reporters yesterday following a nuclear summit in The Hague, Mr. Obama said Russia was acting out of weakness in its annexation of Crimea. He said the international community would never recognize Russia's takeover of Crimea, but that a military response from the West was unlikely. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Jordan trying to salvage Mideast peace talks threatened by Israeli demands that Palestinians agree to extend the process before Israel releases more prisoners. Secretary Kerry spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on his way to Amman and is expected to consult again with the Israeli leader throughout his day of talks with Jordanian King Abdullah and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. At issue is the future of these talks, 8 months into a 9-month peace process. And finally, the search for wreckage from a missing Malaysia airliner continues today in the remote waters off the southern Indian Ocean. Improved weather allowed 12 planes and 2 ships to return to the area, some 2,500 kilometers southwest of the Australian city of Perth. Strong winds forced a 24-hour delay of the search yesterday. And that's a look at some of today's top news stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song 59 Old Lover by Young DC.
The young says to be, yeah, like a goal. Where you damn gonna go? Is the money there? Come on, girl, turn left. It's time now to let you know what I know much. Can I lure you mad? Cool, pin, bend more, handy guards. I can't lie. When the ball fell the wall, hear me obey. Can it me God making this to be hard, but you can't. When the Sudanese, we are part in the big war here. Part of being young, yes, I do never die. DC, handy guards say what you have. Can you fight? Come on, Kurushvi, Ido Harambie, wow, this corruption, Shumu Stepa, Sika Mafi, Hilo Hita, Yus, Gwam Gwam, Dufata Papa, Dufata Mama, Be happy here.
Anajumbo Kali Malcolm, Atakarabu Kisim Saki, Muhammadanas Kubade.
We have been listening to Young DC and that song, 59-year-old lover. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We have been here.
myself, and I see in Keys Records with a new feeling for cross-sex generations.